put a spell on you. Cause you're mine.
Welcome to Hex Rated, where we four witches will take you on a magical journey through foul language and outrageous feminism. Plus the little witchy shit.
You know I can't stand it. You're running around. You know better, daddy.
So I went to Home Goods today and I was really disappointed with their Halloween situation.
Really? Normally Home Goods has like good stuff. Oh no, I'm thinking I of know, at they... home. But Home Goods too.
Oh. At Home has good stuff too, but yeah, Home Goods is like the home decorating TJ Maxx. And so usually they have like two different sections. They have like the front display and then they have like more shit like towards the back. Mm-hmm. And then they also have stuff mixed in with like the foods and baking and everything. And they just really only had the one section and it was all like really boring, weak stuff. I don't know if it's like super picked over and I missed it or what. It was, yeah, it was like real fucking weak.
That sucks.
They might also be like, is anybody celebrating Halloween this year? I mean, I still got my decorations out, but I also leave some of those out all year long. So it's kind of like just a few extra pumpkins here and there.
I feel like people are celebrating harder and getting their decorations out earlier because of quarantine. Because they're like, well, I can't go to any parties, so I may as well like get real fucking festive.
You need to inject a little joy into your life right now, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. My only problem is I worry that if I decorate like a ton, that kids are going to be like, where is my candy at? I'm like, I'm sorry, this year I can't give out candy, kids.
You got to turn the porch light off.
Yeah.
You can always like put candy in a bowl and just leave it on the porch and just let them go crazy.
Yeah, but then everybody's touching the same candy.
That's true, but you're not touching anyone.
Yeah, but I was going to do individually, like, bagged candies and either, like, hang them on the iron picket fence or, like, rig up something where they're, like, hanging from the trees or, like, clipped on a garland in front of the porch. That might be a good mm-hmm. one so that people don't actually try to go up to the door, like, hang a garland, kind of like a velvet rope, and so that everyone gets, so people aren't touching the same things.
Yeah.
So they're not contaminating each other, but then also I don't have to hand candy to anybody. Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to get a slingshot. Just slingshot it. No, slingshot that's not safe.
One of my students was like, my mom is going to get a t-shirt cannon for candy. And I was like, I hope that was a joke. Like, I feel like that must have been a joke. If not, mad respect to your mom for being willing to just blast children in the face with candy. But like,
yeah, those are meant to like go up to like the third tier in an arena. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's a little more firepower than is warranted. But
how are y'all doing? Tell me about your lives.
Today I did a staff lesson and that was fun.
Oh yeah.
Cause I don't know if I've talked about it on here, but jiu-jitsu has been on hold. So my work with that is like not the warrior training there is not happening just because pandemic, kind of hard to wear a mask while you're rolling around on a mat in each other's faces and putting each other in chokeholds. So I put jiu-jitsu on hold for now, and I was trying to find something to keep me busy and keep me a little bit sane. Mm-hmm. So I started taking staff lessons from Michelle Smith, who is a stunt woman. You've seen her on something. Like, she's on the CW, like, Black Canary on CW. She's in 100 and Supergirl. She was Angel Dust's stunt woman in Deadpool. And if you watch Motherland, Fort Salem, like, it's a total witchy show. She's, like, did all the rope dart training for that. So she's pretty amazing. And I got wind of her because Lily sent me a video, was like, this chick makes me think of you, and I was like, I am in love with her, she's amazing. And then I looked into her and I was like, oh my gosh, she has lessons online right now, because you know, stunt work is not like booming right now with the industry being slightly on hold. So yeah, she's doing like she has like an online academy where you can do private lessons through Zoom. And so I started taking private lessons, and it's been a lot of fun. Today was difficult. Like the last lesson I had, I was like, I rocked it. She was like, you got that so fast. I never had someone get it that fast before. And I was like, yeah, I'm doing amazing. And then today was one of those days. It was just all derp, like all the time, just dropping it and dropping it. Cause it was trying to do like a back roll where you just roll it behind your back to the other hand. And it's like, looks super cool. But I was just like, this is going to take a while. So it was a little bit more humbling after the last lesson where I was like, yeah, I'm awesome. I already got some skills. Like I'm learning so fast. And I was like, nope, back down a notch.
Well, you are awesome. So
it's a lot of fun. So if you want to learn staff, or like at least like a lot of the spinning and a lot of the technique of like manipulating it, definitely check her out. She has like a website where you can book some Zoom lessons. But yeah, that's about
it. You're so cool making friends with like celebrities and stuff.
She's pretty cool. But I always wanted to.
Didn't she follow you on Instagram too?
Yeah. I squeed a little bit where I was like, squee, because she was like, what's your Instagram handle? And I was just like, squee, that goals. Someday we're gonna be friends. Someday. Because we have a lot in common, like of like interests. Like she loves Catwoman. And like she had a Labyrinth shirt on the other lesson, and I was like, oh my gosh, we should be friends. We love all the same things.
She would be lucky to be your friend because you're awesome.
Well, I've got you ladies, so like the slots are pretty filled, but like there might be a little room for like a distant friend, like a long distance friend.
You're like, you could be on like the outer circle, you know? Like,
what have you ladies been up to? I miss y'all so much. Tell me about your lives.
I know. Quarantine sucks. I mean, I'm not exactly quarantined right now because I have to go to work. And work has been crazy because I have, like, students aren't allowed to come to my art room this year because they just don't want students, like, wandering the halls. Which, I mean, I get it. The districts are just, like, throwing anything they can at the walls and seeing what sticks with, like, these policies because, like, they have to be open. They have to let students come in. And they're like, no one really knows how to keep everybody safe. So let's just do anything we can think of to keep people safe. And one of those is to limit like hallway traffic and keep the kids in their classrooms as much as possible. So no one is coming to the art room. So they bought me a cart, the district did. And to be fair, it's a really fancy cart. It's fucking huge. It's like three levels. It's got two cup holders. Like the district really tried to sell it to the art and music teachers. They were like, we got y'all like all the bells and whistles. Like it's got like a power strip and it's got like a little pull out thing for my laptop. But anyway, so I have to push my cart around and it is so much more exhausting than just being in my classroom and like having students come to me. Like I inevitably, because I have to in the morning. So I get to work at like 6:45. And then at 7:15, I have duty, like in morning duty. And then at 7:45, I go back to my classroom. And then at 7:50, I have to be with my first class. So there's not a lot of time in the morning. And so basically, I have to have everything ready for my four morning classes, like as soon as I get there, basically. And I inevitably forget something. And a poor little third grader cried the other day because I forgot her artwork and it was in the classroom. And I mean, I think that she was just having a bad day. And this was like the last straw was forgetting the painting. But I was like, oh my God, kid, me too. Me fucking too. I just want to cry. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, it's exhausting.
What capacity is your school at?
We're at about 60% right now. So about 40% of our students are doing distance learning, which is pretty good because there's other schools. Like my school was small to begin with. So we have just shy of 300 students in the building, which is really good because the school down the street has like 700 kids in the building. So we are in a... like our school is pretty like split where we have some students that are pretty like economically disadvantaged and both parents work. And then we have like half of the school where they have like one parent who stays at home or the parents have jobs where they work. They can now work from home. So you could tell like the students who are there are the ones who really just don't have a choice. And the students whose parents can keep them at home are keeping them at home. So... and we haven't had any COVID cases. The school, like the closest elementary school to us has one active COVID case. And then the high school that like my school feeds into has like 10 active COVID cases right now. But, But yeah, it's crazy. Like, I'm sanitizing my hands all the time. And like the poor kids, like they want so desperately like to just be close to you. Like they're like right up on me, like especially the little ones. Like the big ones get it, but like kinder, first and second grade, they want to hug you, they want to touch you, they want to be like right close to you. They don't understand personal space. Like my first day, actually it was my second day, but my first day with this particular kindergarten class, one student had his mask pulled up and he was just chewing on it. Another student was just like swinging her mask around. And then another student was rolling on the floor licking things. And I was like, I am 100% going to get COVID from this class. This is going to be the group of kids that give me COVID. It is the student on the floor right now licking my shit. Like, but what do? They're five. And in fact, some of them are four. Because right now in Texas, school starts in August, but you don't have to turn five until September 1st to get into kindergarten. So some of our kindergartners are actually four and they turn, they're all five now, but when they started school, they were only four because their birthdays were like end of August, which is just real tough. But anyway, so it's just real tough on students, on teachers, on everybody. COVID is tough on everybody. It's my sad story of Texas public education right now. Scarlett, what about you? You still have all your animals?
Yes, I still have all my animals. What else has been going on? I don't really have anything new.
I know nothing's happening except for like things that send you into like existential dread.
A little semi-quarantine Maybon.
We did.
So I finally saw your fucking face. Yes. Since like February.
Oh, it's been months.
I know it's been since February because I had a gift from Pantheacon for you that I hadn't given to you yet. So, and I have one for Jay too, but I did see you at a socially distanced puppy party few months ago and I forgot to bring your gift, so.
And it was just like nice to see you, like
I mean, part of it is because I know in like a few weeks when flu gets into full swing, it's going to be back to like complete insanity.
Oh, yeah.
Because then everyone is going to either have COVID and be like, no, I just have the flu, which still don't spread that around. Mm-hmm. That is also bad. Or, you know, people are just going to have the flu. Flus can be very dangerous. But people are going to have the flu and then are going to be flooding ERs mm-hmm. and doctor's offices and testing facilities because they're sick and they have very similar symptoms and they think they have COVID. So all those apparati that we have are going to be flooded again. So I'm just, it's going to get crazy again. Mm-hmm. I feel like in the past, like some sort of, I'm personally relaxing my quarantine slightly because before that it was just I was going to work, which is quarantined because we have the front door locked. So I'm just in a different place, but I'm not interacting with anyone. And then I'd go to the grocery store maybe like every week and a half or every other week or so. And then I just wasn't really going anywhere else or doing anything. And like I did go to like some socially distanced like puppy parties and things like that. But, you know, I hadn't had anyone over to the house. Like, we did have some people over to see the kitten, but that was like 6 feet away. Everyone was masked, like all of that kind of stuff. So having a little mini Maybon thing was sort of, the first big break in quarantine for me, but it was all people that are pretty super conscientious about their exposure and have not been sick and are not currently sick or anything. Cause I'm sort of like, well, it's going to get worse in a little bit. So if I have a chance to do something fairly safe with people now, I may as well take advantage. Cause I'm going to feel like wanting to lock it pretty tightly once flu season hits.
Yeah. I think it's like hitting that point of like, fatigue where it's easy, like where it's just hard to keep it up, like where it's like breaking point almost, where it's just like, is it worth it sometimes? And you have to
remember at this point. Yeah, well, I mean, the thing is like most people are not complying with mm-hmm. it. So at this point,
the quarantine is not, because originally I was super conscientious about it because I was like, well, if we all are super setting a good example, then everyone will participate, everyone will be protected, and, you know, we'll all get well faster. Mm-hmm. But now quarantine is really just only for me. It's really like, I'm not concerned about spreading it out in the world and contributing to the virus continuing its curve. Like, I'm more concerned about, I just don't want to get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but in terms of like sending a message to other people around me to be like, you know, like clearly that hasn't taken. No one's really following. I mean, some people are, but I feel like in terms of like my sacrifice of being strictly quarantined is like not slowing the spread of COVID. It's slowing my contracting it for sure. But as far as like contributing to the how many vectors are out wandering around in the world, spreading it to each other, it's not really doing mm-hmm. anything.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Hey, y'all, this is Hex Rated. But yeah, I'm Lily.
I'm Scarlett.
And I'm Jay.
We're Hex Rated. We're here to talk to you about all sorts of shit.
Yeah. What are we talking about today, ladies? Crazy shit.
Politics. Yeah. Kind of. Issues. Fun. Things like that. We're just here to make sure you vote. Really. Yeah. Like, yes. just please vote for the love of baby Jesus and Mary and Joseph and everybody. Just the Holy Ghost, often forgotten, who we were discussing earlier. And just everybody. You should vote. Just fucking
vote.
Oh,
can I talk about...
Talk about that shirt.
Something yeah. I saw today.
Talk about it.
I was on OrientalTradingCompany.com looking at the Halloween stuff. And they have a whole section, and I think I've ranted about this before because I discovered it like last year, of like overtly Christian Halloween stuff, which to me is very weird. Like, either just celebrate it as a non-denominational fun holiday, or if you like feel really strongly that its origins are not Christian, which they aren't, then just refrain. You know, like, I don't understand the point of like having all these like, having your like little goodie bag for your kids and like wearing t-shirts and having all these decor that like specifically reference that you are celebrating Halloween in a overtly Jesus-y way. Like, I don't really see, but whatever. But so most of it's just like not well designed and pretty cheesy, but there was a shirt that says Jesus is my boo, and it has this little cartoon ghost on it. And it makes such little sense that I want it for real. Because I was like, is Jesus your boo, like your boyfriend? Or is Jesus the ghost? Like,
yeah, what
I
is
don't,
happening?
Like,
so I get many the questions. Pun. Yeah. It's the implications of it, you know? Like, and plus, well, it said child shirt. It said like youth on like the picture that yeah. you sent. So is the child dating Jesus? Isn't that a Catholic thing, though?
Well, I mean, nuns, like, ceremonially, like, get married to Jesus yes. as a symbolic renunciation of
so
their,
Jesus is their boo, so the nuns can life. Wear the shirt.
Yeah, but I don't children. Know that everyone gets to say that. And also, if Jesus is the ghost, that would be heretical, right? Because it's denying his resurrection and his divinity.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This, so, I mean...
yeah. There's a lot of questions so I have questions. About this shirt. So many that I just kind of want to
I mean, I think it would be kind of hilarious if you wore it and you were like super witchy, like upside down cross and like big like stiletto like boots or something. And like, I don't know, just like went real crazy witchy. And then you had this shirt that said Jesus is my boo.
That's kind of how I dress all the time.
It'd be hilarious. It would work, I think.
Well, I used to have, when they first, I'm sure you've seen them, there are all these, like, Jesus is my homeboy t-shirts.
Yes.
And it was, like, real hipster at the time. And I had one, and my mom was, like, always super concerned when I would wear it, because she thought that somehow people could, like, see into my soul and know that I don't worship Jesus and would realize that I'm wearing it ironically and be offended. And I was like, I don't know that they just know that off the bat. And I was like, and Jesus can still be my homeboy.
Like, yeah, yeah, you can totally.
But yes, friends. I am absolutely wearing it ironically. So you...
Oh, that's hilarious. But that shirt makes no sense. It's one of the really annoying things about, like, really, like, none of the, like, traditions for Easter, they don't make sense. What does a bunny have to do with the resurrection of Christ? What does your...
It doesn't.
What does a tree have to do with the birth of Jesus? But...
What does the name Easter have to do with...
It doesn't. It doesn't.
Yeah, no.
No. But,
That is not an ancient Aramaic word.
No. But, like, but it's the Halloween ones that really, like... That are really like, this is very confusing. Everyone's confused. You're trying very hard to slap your religion onto this. And it's not working.
Well, I mean, it is
notoriously,
it's the spookiest of pagan holidays, as opposed to like Yule or Easter or Groundhog's Day.
Sorry. I just imagine that little groundhog talking to me about Jesus. I mean, if somebody was going to talk to me about Jesus, I would want it to be the groundhog. I mean, I would listen to what he has to say, even if I'm not buying it. You know, if the groundhog came to my door and was like, have you heard the good word? I'd be like, you know what, buddy? I'm going to hear you out. You're adorable. Yeah. I'm impressed that you're speaking to me. You like got up.
Let's have a dialogue.
Yeah, you know, let's talk about this.
Let's hash it out.
No, you bring the Bible. Quote it at me. Come inside. Sit at the table. Pour us some water. What do groundhogs drink? Water. So there you go. So that's what the Christians need to be doing.
They drink that woodchuck cider, woodchuck dummy.
Woodchuck cider, yes. You're right. I'm going to start stocking that in my refrigerator just for when the Jesus groundhog comes to talk to me. I want a comic about the Jesus groundhog now. Can somebody write his adventures? Because I will read that.
My dream is to have that memeable, there's like a little baby seal that has wandered up to someone's doorstep and someone opens the door and took a picture of it and someone captioned like, excuse me, sir, do you have time to talk about our Lord and Savior Poseidon? And I'm like, yes, 100% yes, yes.
Please talk to me. Talk to me. Talk to me about what we're going to talk about today. Haha, that was a good segue. Okay.
It was good.
It was good. Thank you. So... We're just going to talk about some issues today, getting back to our political roots, our just like encouraging you to vote and do things. And because now is the time. You should probably vote early just to be safe. Mm-hmm. And yeah, who wants to take it away? You, me,
well,
someone?
I did not have a particular pet issue to talk about, but I figured I'd start this off by just saying that like I am unusually burnt out on politics right now. I know a lot of people are, but like, I've always been super involved, like, you know, family get togethers always center around like discussing politics. And, you know, my dad in particular has this encyclopedic knowledge of like Texas politics and American politics, world politics.
Well, wasn't your grandpa a senator?
He was a congressman.
A congressman. Okay.
Yes. For the state and federal legislature. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so we're super into all of that and love talking about it. And, you know, I try to stay super current on everything and follow the news. And, like, I think I have a fairly good understanding of the mechanics of our government and whatnot. And so for me to be really burnt out on it is unusual to just, like, not want to talk about it and feel very and the not find it exciting or interesting. But, and I know a lot of people are feeling that way. And I think that, last election, you know, this is a whole other issue, but there was a lot of backlash against, you know, Hillary, people that just for various reasons strongly dislike her. There were a lot of people that were like super energized by Bernie and were felt very disenfranchised and disappointed that he didn't get the nomination. A lot of people that were just wildly disgusted that somehow Trump made it on the ticket. But I think that, like, this year, like, no, I don't know anyone that's, like, super enthusiastic about Biden on his own. Mm-hmm. They're very, like, people that are super enthusiastic about voting Democratic are because they don't want Trump to get reelected. So, like, I don't know anyone that's super energized about the Democratic ticket. So, yeah, I just my concern is that voter turnout's going to be really low. Mm-hmm. It was pretty low last time. Usually Democrats do well when they have high turnout. In the past few decades, certainly in the past 20 years or so, Republicans have a pretty reliable base. And I don't think a lot of people realize that Trump didn't get more. He didn't have this groundswell of grassroots new voters or people that were jumping party lines to vote for him or anything. He had roughly the same amount of votes that McCain did and that Romney did. The issue is that unlike when those candidates ran against Obama, who had a huge outpouring of enthusiasm and record numbers of people registering to vote as first-time voters or people that hadn't voted in a while, all of that kind of stuff. So basically, the last time it was Hillary's election to lose. She just didn't have enough people get out and vote. So I'm very concerned about that mm-hmm. being the issue this time around. So I wanted to speak to that a little bit. And I am usually a third party voter, and I'm still really struggling with who I'm going to vote for at the top of the ticket. I many times have voted Libertarian Party. And there's good reasons to do that, even if they don't have a shot. If they get about 3%, they get more federal funding and whatnot. But I will say that even if you are like me and not super enthused to vote for Joe Biden and you don't want to vote for Trump, you should 100% still go vote, because there are a million other things on that ballot that are also very, very, very important. And in fact, your local and state elections probably have more effect on your day-to-day life than the president. So it is very important to go vote and to vote on those down ballot things, and also to start following your local elections, not only state, but your city, because here in Plano, and I think most of the Dallas counties have midterm elections that are in May. So it's not going to be the big, and, you know, they have elections happening every year, not just like every 4 years. So I would advise people to not only vote this time around in November, but to like keep it up. And one thing that I've found to be helpful is I'm really fortunate that the city of Plano is pretty technologically advanced, and they broadcast all their city council meetings. They live stream them. They also publish agendas for every committee meeting, and then they will post the minutes afterwards. So not only can you attend all the meetings, but if you don't want to see them live or attend in person, you can get all those notes. So it's pretty transparent. So it's easy to like get involved and feel like you are up to date. So not everybody has those advantages if your town is not that technologically advanced. But if you have those options available to you, it's definitely worth it. Because those, so if particularly if you're concerned about things like police brutality and criminal justice and whatnot, that is something that's really only going to be handled at the local level in terms of who the sheriffs and judges are. Sometimes those are elected positions. Sometimes they're appointed. And how the community is demanding the police department behave, things like school boards. You know, several educational institutions have declined to renew contracts with city police in terms of having security from them. So there's a lot of things that most of that pressure to reform that is going to come from a city level, not from a federal or presidential level. So I would recommend that people, if your city government has options for you to start at least just going to see city council meetings, I would recommend that you do so and get familiar with like who's in your local government. Obviously, vote for those positions. There's also a lot of committees that are volunteer based that you can just join. You don't have to like run for office or really have any qualifications. So that's another way to get involved. And then also there's like lots of, especially right now, quarantine, you can't meet up with people, but there's lots of Facebook groups for if you have a particular interest. For example, like, you know, if you're affiliated with like the progressive movement, there's tons of Facebook groups and meetups and initiatives for that, or things like reproductive rights or environmental issues. You can get hooked up with groups that will funnel lots of really interesting, juicy information to you and hook you up with a lot of local stuff that you might not have known was going on. Because that's how a lot of these protests and stuff in the past few months were getting coordinated. So basically, like, my little spiel was just definitely go vote. To like get educated about local politics. And you can do that without having to be excited or stress yourself out about national politics. They can be two separate worlds for you. And I would strongly recommend doing that.
No, I agree with you. Just voting in general and getting involved at your local level. Like you said, Scarlett, that's going to be what generates the most change for you, like on a daily basis in your day-to-day life. So, and like knowing also who your mayor is, even like my school district had a really big campaign the last few years to like encourage teachers to get out and vote, because teachers just don't vote. Like, we are a very and I mean, I'm sure there's a variety of reasons for that. Part of the thing is, like, I mean, teachers are just overworked and tired all the time. Like, who has time to figure all that out? But everybody's overworked and tired, but teachers don't vote. And considering that we're technically public servants and every decision that's made about our jobs is made by like school boards who are elected and like the state legislatures who are elected, like those are elected positions, it is within our best interest, like as educators, to get out there and to vote. Like, so my district has like really been pushing people to vote and like not saying how to vote, but just to vote. And I was really surprised, like this, not last year, but the year before, being in a meeting and so many of the teachers I was sitting there with, like, did not know who their state senator was or their state congressperson was or who the mayor in their town was. And I think that that's pretty common for a lot of people, just to not know and to not really care that much. Because you think like the important ones are like the federal level. But like to Scarlett's point, the ones that are really affecting your day-to-day life, that's at the local level. So you really need to get out there and educate yourself on who's representing you and what they're doing, what committees they're on, and like what bills they've sponsored, like all of that, at least in Texas. I mean, I'm sure it's online in other states too, but all of that is online. It is like a Google search away. It is very easy.
Well, specifically, what are some issues dealing with education itself that are important, that are directly affect you, but are also some stuff that you would like to unload on us? I would love to know.
Well, I mean, there's a lot, but specifically right now in Texas and in other states, there's the whole like voucher thing right now. Like, public schools are being defunded. Like, in Texas, the state government in the last 20 years has shifted the amount that they contribute to public education, and shifted that, like, not just a little bit, but we're talking going from 80% to like 20%, and shifted that responsibility onto the local, like, taxpayers. And
property taxes,
yes, thank you, onto property taxes. And so people's property taxes are going up to support schools, and because the state government has shifted that funding away, so people are getting very upset at school districts who are not making these decisions at all. Like, the school board does not decide how your taxes are allocated or how much money they get. Furthermore, the state of Texas has been taking money back from school districts. Like, it's called like Robin Hooding or something, where the state of Texas is going back, reanalyzing what they have given districts over the past few years, and they're forcing districts to pay it back. So like my district in particular has been asked to like pay back millions of dollars in state funding that we were given. And
that's insane. Gosh,
it is. It really is insane. And of course, it affects everything. And think about public education. And I could wax poetic about this forever. But your child is, and I'm not saying that public education is perfect. I'm not saying that the system does not need a lot of changes. And I'm not saying that the public education system is perfect. And I'm also not saying that there aren't good charter schools and there aren't good private schools. But the ideal of public education is so important and to society. And like the ideal that every child has equal access to a quality education is so important to the continuation of our society and to the equality within our society. Like, and that's really what the voucher system is doing too. But 'cause the thing is, like, Dan Patrick does not want your child to get this, to be well educated. It is not within, like, it does not benefit him or what he wants for there to be public, non-religious education. It just doesn't. Because if you're educated, then, I mean, the ideal is if you're educated, you're free. And, I mean, not to sound like a crazy person, but a learned mind is a free mind, and they don't want your kids to be free. They don't want you to be free. Because that totally disrupts everything that certain people want. That, like,
ugh. Well, for Dan Patrick specifically, he's our lieutenant governor, and he is a certified crazy person. But he plays to a base of extraordinarily literal evangelical Christians, and that are extremely conservative and have a very anti-education base. Like, we're talking people that think that the world is 6,000 years old, think that Christianity should be the official religion of the United States, are for abstinence-only education, are against any form of subsidized birth control, are obviously against abortion. But, I mean, we're talking about a very specific subset of conservatives that are very, very anti-intellectualism, anti-education. Yes. And so obviously it benefits him to have more people on that level, if that is the base he has associated himself with. So for him specifically, it's coming from that direction.
Mm-hmm.
In case you're not from Texas, yeah, or you're not, like, aware, you don't know of some of our officials.
Dan Patrick, you're right. Certified crazy person, awful. Vote to get Dan Patrick out.
Other
certified
states
crazy
have
people.
Their,
yes,
they're Dan Patricks, though. So, like, keep in mind, absolutely. This is not just a Texas issue. Like, no. There are other states with these kind of guys.
And the thing about Texas specifically is our textbooks, because we're so big, the textbooks that they create for our curriculum, and by the way, the curriculum your child is getting is written by people, in some instances, who have never been in a classroom. And that is because of who is being voted in. The head of the Texas Education Agency, the Texas Education Department, whose name is just escaping me now, and I literally just had it, but this dude, he was like a technology mogul. He has nothing to do with education, and he was appointed by Abbott. And that's the thing, if you are electing people who do not have things like education as something that is important to them, they're going to just put in people who have never been in a classroom. So my job is being controlled, like, ultimately, by somebody who has never taught in a classroom before, who I don't even know if they've spoken to kids before. Like, maybe he has, I don't know. But that's the thing, our textbooks, because Texas is so big, the textbooks that are written for our state to buy, for our public schools to buy, end up in all of the other southern states, because we are such the big buyer. So actually what's going on in Texas and what we decide needs to be in our textbooks affects the rest of the southern United States. So that's something to consider as well. When you're
although
voting.
I do secretly kind of like the idea of everyone having to learn Texas
history. I mean, that's true.
It's pretty radical.
But when, it's also pretty whitewashed as
it's whitewashed and that, anti-science, really. Mm-hmm. Like, there's so many anti-science things and anti-reproductive things, like abstinence-only education. What the fuck? Like, but it's things like that. And it's the standardized testing. Like, I don't decide, and teachers don't decide what standardized tests to give. And in fact, every teacher I know hates the STAR test, and that's our standardized test is the STAR test. We all hate it. No one thinks that it is a good test. No one thinks that it is accurately, like measuring what a student knows. It's stressful on the kids. It's not a good test. But we don't decide. You know who decides? The state government decides, So if you're a teacher, you need to vote. If you're anybody, you need to vote, because that's who's deciding these things. And the STAR test affects a student's education moving forward. If you fail the STAR test, you can't graduate. Like, you can get held back. And not only that, it affects the funding of the schools. So our funding is determined in part by this awful test that doesn't make any developmental sense. Like,
well, and it does it affect the job security of teachers if an objectively good teacher has a statistical disparity in terms of high scores? Could that person be let go? Because they're like, well, you don't bring up students that score well on this test, even though in other measures they're doing great.
It can, yes, and that has happened before. And the thing is, the schools right now are being pushed to be so quote unquote data driven. It's like, how are our students performing when we look at the standardized test? Like, what's going on? And in theory, when you hear this word like data driven, you're like, oh yeah, we should be driven by the data, but the data of how a student does on a test or on even multiple tests does not paint any sort of complete picture of that child, of that student, I shouldn't say child, but that student, or the quality of their education, because the STAR test only tests in one way. You have to be able to read. You have to be able to read well. You have to be able to write. And even though there are these modifiers, like students can have the test read to them, or some students get extra time, it's not measuring a student's overall like intellectual abilities. It's measuring it in a very specific way. Furthermore, some kids have test anxiety. It is very stressful. They sit there for hours. They have to ask to go to the bathroom. They can't speak. They have been coached on this test and exactly how to take this test for months. Like, it is an anxiety, like the teachers are stressed. It is an anxiety inducing thing. And then the teachers, we get the data from the STAR test and we're like, okay, our students didn't do well in this thing and our students didn't do well in this thing. And what does that mean like for us as educators? And I feel like super grateful every day that art is not like a STAR tested subject, because that would suck. But it is so stressful on everyone, and it is ineffective. But it makes a lot of fucking money for certain groups. Like, the STAR test is expensive. The state pays so much to have this test written and graded and created and shipped out. So much money. So people are making, like, that's the thing. It's a money-making endeavor. People are making money off of standardized testing. And in my opinion, really, there should not. Standardized testing is bullshit. It is totally bullshit. It is not measuring your child's ability. And stupid.
Yeah, as someone who is a very good test taker, I will fully admit that they don't measure anything other than your ability to
take a test. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The only way that I succeeded at the standardized tests that I did well in was because I knew what they wanted me to answer, mm-hmm. not that I knew the answer. But this is all like super interesting to me, because I always went to private school and I don't have children, and I actually didn't ever have to take any of the state tests because private schools are not required to do them. And I went to a very elite private school, so I got a great education. So I'm very far removed from this issue. And I will say to people that also feel like they are not invested in this issue at all, either, you know, you don't have kids or whatever, I still have to live in a society full of people that the majority of them rely on public education. And I would like the majority of people I have to interact with to not be dumb.
Yes, thank you.
So I am more than happy to have my tax dollars go to fund something that I do not personally benefit from directly.
Well,
because I benefit from it indirectly because I get to be around people that are not complete fucking raving idiots.
Well,
and I would very much like everyone in this country to be extraordinarily well educated and not to, and I don't care if it costs me a little bit more money, because in the long run, those people are one, going to be more pleasant to be around, two, are going to be more productive members of society and have better opportunities once they graduate. So
it is,
it's an investment.
It helps all of society for everyone to be well educated. Oh gosh, somebody we used to hang out with, I raged at him one time because he was like, I don't think I should have to pay taxes for education because I don't have any kids. And I was like, you are the worst type of person. I literally hate you. That doesn't make any sense. Like, okay, so you don't have kids. So when you are old, like maybe you die tomorrow, but the people who took care of you at the hospital, the statistically probably had a public education. The EMTs who came to your car wreck probably had a public education. When you're old and you can't take care of yourself and you're in an old folks home, those people probably had a public education. Do you want those people who are taking care of you, because within a society we have to take care of each other, do you want those people to have had a not so great education, or do you want them to have the best education because they are taking care of you? So all of society benefits from everyone being educated.
And taxes don't work that way either, because it's not like, well, I don't own a car, so I don't want my taxes going towards roads. Like, that's not how it works. Like, that's just not how taxes work. So it's frustrating when people are just like, oh, well, it doesn't affect me. It affects the society and our infrastructure and everything.
It does affect you.
Yes, yes. It's selfish people.
Well, and I think it's like people who just don't think. It's like, it's such like a self-centered way of thinking. It's like, I don't have kids. Why should I have to pay for other people's kids to be educated? It's the same thing with insurance. Well, you know, I don't take birth control. So why should I pay for other people's birth control? It's like, that's not how it fucking works, motherfucker. Like,
I don't have a prostate. Like, I'm not going to get prostate cancer. So, or I'm not going to get testicular cancer for sure.
Oh, for sure.
Definitely not. So I don't think that my insurance dollars should go to pay for screenings or treatment or anything for ball bearing humans,
mm-hmm.
who are susceptible. Like, you're welcome. Like, but it's the same thing. Like that. But that's how insurance works: is that everybody puts in a little, so that you can pull your resources and divert it to people who need it the most. I mean, it's basically like, it's kind of, it's an investment. So mm-hmm. You put a little bit up front. But like, for example, if I chose to not have my tax dollars go to public education, things that I will end up paying for with my tax dollars instead would be, you know, public assistance, drug rehabilitation services, which I'm fine with. But like, if people are not able to graduate high school or are doing so with a substandard education and are then not able to get jobs, they're going to need lower income housing. They're going to need more public assistance. There's going to probably be an increase in crime, mm-hmm. because if you can't get a profitable job, above board, you might turn to something that's below board. People that are less at, I mean, there's a million other social ills that being more educated will, and obviously it's not a one-to-one correlation, but it's definitely not going to hurt to have people be, my grandfather had a great saying, and he says, you're not going to get bow-legged from carrying it around, meaning knowledge, that like, you can't be too educated. It's not going to hurt you,
mm-hmm.
but there are very concrete ways that being undereducated can very much hurt you,
mm-hmm.
and deteriorate your community.
Yes.
So even if from purely selfish reasons, like, it's going to cost you one way or another,
mm-hmm.
if you are not, like, living off the grid as a sovereign citizen.
Yes. 100% yes. And like, I'm just going to speak briefly on vouchers because this is like a thing that keeps getting brought up by DeVoe, and it's a Dan Patrick thing too, is this whole idea of the, like the voucher system where basically a student,
because I honestly don't understand how this works.
It's, so it's actually very confusing to me. It's even confusing like as an educator, but basically this, the money that a state would have paid a school for a student. So a school gets a certain amount of money from the state for like the students that are each student that's enrolled. So the money that would have been given to a public school, the student gets that as a voucher and they can take that to any school. So they can take it to a charter school or they can take it to a private school or a religious school that would not have received state funding otherwise because they are a private or religious institution. And now that's the, and now the, that school is getting the state provided money, so taxpayer money, to have that student there. So in some ways this sounds like really good, like, oh, so a student who before could not go to a private school can now afford to, like they would have had to pay tuition to go to a private school, now they can take their voucher and say, this is basically my tuition, like the state's going to give you money. The issue comes in with the fact that it is not a system that works for everyone. It does not democratize the access to a private education equally amongst different demographics. But the big issue to me too is also what's happening is taxpayer money is being used to fund religious schools that would not have received taxpayer money otherwise because they are a religious school. So my money is going to, and it's already frustrating that public schools are being forced to do like abstinence only education or like anti-science, what I would consider like anti-evolution, anti-science education, because that's the way that the elected officials are like doing it. That's already very frustrating to me. But the idea that my tax money is now going to a religious institution where who should not be receiving any public money because they are a religious institution, like that to me is the like real big issue with the voucher system. And that is why people like DeVoe and people like Dan Patrick want the voucher system, because they want those schools, those like crazy religious evangelical schools, to be receiving this money. Because in states where this in states where this is, where the voucher system has already taken hold, what has happened is, like, I was reading about this Catholic school that was basically was going to have to, like, this Catholic church that was going to have to get rid of its school because nobody was enrolling and they couldn't afford it. Now their enrollment has gone up a whole lot because people are using the vouchers to send their kids to the Catholic school. And it's not that I'm saying if you want your kids to go to Catholic school, they shouldn't go to Catholic school. Public money should not be going to the Catholic school because it is a religious institution.
Well, and because going back to separation of church and state, even though there is this creeping fundamentalism in public curricula, there is still challenges that can be made to the state or Supreme Court,
yes,
of whether that's appropriate or not. Whereas a religious institution can implement all kinds of rules,
all sorts of
that
crazy
a normal
shit.
Public I mean, they can have you know, morality clauses for the staff.
Mm-hmm.
They can deny enrollment to people. Yes. For example, I knew people that were denied enrollment to religious schools because their parents were divorced. Mm-hmm. Or because they were a same-sex couple, or because they weren't Christian, or all kinds of completely arbitrary things. So they can, and that's legal because it's a private institution. They, because it's private and it's not part of the government and it's not publicly funded, then because it's a private club, they can make rules like that, and they're not subject to the same kinds of laws that govern discrimination and stuff. So basically it's a giant loophole. Mm-hmm. Because they're getting federal or they're getting state funding, but they're not subject to the same restrictions.
Yes.
And requirements that a a public school would be.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I went to what I mean is objectively one of the best private schools in the country. But just because you have to pay money to go to a school does not mean it is good. The one I went to is good, but there are some horrifically bad private schools mm-hmm. that cost a lot of money that do not educate their kids well. And there's a lot of reasons why people would choose dissent to do that. But let me just put that out there. Firsthand experience, not every school that is a private school is academically superior.
Mm-hmm.
That is not a correlation whatsoever. And I was going to also say that, I mean, it seems like, because they talk a lot about the times I've heard vouchers, it has to do with choice, like this idea of, oh, well, if the only public school in your area is not great, but there are other schools that your child could attend that are ranked better or whatever, then you could use the voucher to send them there. But that also assumes that somebody has the geographic or transportation means to do so, because with public school you can at least be bused in.
Yes, they have to bus you in. They're required.
If you don't have access to transportation, being able to use a voucher means nothing if you don't have the means to like get them to this other location. So again, it's favoring people that are already operating with superior means.
Yes.
Than the people that really need public dollars to help them out.
Mm-hmm. No, exactly. And that's what I'm saying, is the whole idea like, oh, you're free to choose. It becomes, you're free to choose to use taxpayer money to fund places that are normally not going to receive funding if you are already in an advantageous position to do that. So it's not equal across the board. It is not, because it's painted as this like, let's give everybody access to the private schools, or let's give everybody access to the charter schools. One, which assumes that automatically a private or a charter school is better than a public school, which, as somebody who has worked in charter schools before and in public schools before, I can tell you that that is not necessarily the case. Just because it is a charter school, just because it's a private school, to Scarlett's point, does not mean it is better than a public school, but it does mean that it is not regulated the same way. And not saying that's right or wrong, but it's totally different.
It's also assuming that all these people that would want to go to that school can get admission.
Yes.
Whereas with
that
public
as well,
school,
they have to accept
you. They have to accommodate your child.
Yes.
If you have learning disabilities or, physical access issues,
mm-hmm.
Or any of that. So, but a private school, you still have to apply and be accepted.
Yeah.
So,
and they don't have to.
Not everyone has. So, yeah.
When I worked at a charter school, not a single one of my students had a 504. So a 504 disability plan is the way that the school has to accommodate any sort of disability, ranging from dyslexia to anxiety to a physical disability. The charter school I went to never happened, because they did not accept students who had these things, because it is a whole lot of work to have to go through accommodating a student with a 504. Public schools cannot say no to you, because you are guaranteed this public education. They have to accommodate you, or they have to accommodate your student or your child. Whereas private and charter schools do not. In the charter school I was at, we didn't have a single autistic child who was diagnosed autistic. I can tell you that we probably had some students who were on the spectrum, but we did not have a single diagnosed autism spectrum disorder student. At my public school now, oh, I have a ton. And that's because public schools cannot turn you away. They have to accept you. They have to accommodate your student. And I mean, I can't speak to every public school, but I can tell you that public school teachers, by and large, and I'm not saying this to everyone, public school teachers, by and large, teachers in general, but public school teachers, by and large, are, I said that like five times, trying to do absolutely the best job for your children. You don't get into education, and this is like another weird misconception, you don't get into education because you don't like kids. Like, I will admit, I have met bitter and burned out teachers in my life. It's 100%. I have met teachers who I have wondered what inspired them to get into public education or any education or to work with children in general. But I can tell you that the vast majority of teachers that I have had to work with in my career, their ultimate goal is to give your child the best education and to take care of your child and to provide for your child. I know, and this is now I'm just like ranting. I know teachers who have bought students shoes, who have paid for them to eat, who have like just gone above and beyond, way out of their way to pay for like their own money to help students. And now I'm just caught off on a tangent on public education, how great teachers are.
But that reminded me of something that you mentioned once that I didn't know about, but training that you had to do as being a mandatory, what is it called? A mandatory reporter or?
Oh, yes. Like, no, I have
so
to.
So if you see, if you, yeah.
Yes, which I have to report abuse. I'm a mandatory reporter.
I doubt is a thing
reporter.
That, yeah. Yeah. So explain that a little bit, because I'm pretty sure that's not a thing that is required of charter or. It might be charter, but definitely private schools. I don't, not that I think that private school teachers aren't invested in their students, but I didn't realize that this was a thing. So go ahead and just explain it to people.
Oh, well, as I'm a mandatory, so being a mandatory reporter means that I am obligated by law to report any sort of abuse that I suspect to CPS. And I have had to do that multiple times. Like I've had to call CPS in the middle of the day because it has to be done right away. So basically, if a student says something, if you see, if they're acting weird, if they there's bruises or if there's signs of any sort of abuse, any sort of neglect, any sort of sexual abuse, it is my job to, I have to immediately contact the counselor and I don't have to necessarily explain what's happening, but I have to say that I have to make a CPS report. And the counselor comes, watches the class, and then I have to sit on the phone while making a CPS report, which I can tell you is like emotionally draining. Like it is very emotionally draining, but I'm required by law to do this. I'm a mandatory reporter. I cannot ignore it. And if I did, it could come back and there could be legal ramifications for me.
And you're trained on that.
Yes.
You have to do separate training in addition to any kind of training that you do to teach it all or teach
yes.
the subject that you
teach. So every year we have to go through training on the signs of abuse, signs of sexual abuse, what to look for, like statistics, signs of neglect. That's part of our yearly training at the beginning of the year.
And is this for students that are in your classroom or?
Any student in the school.
Any student
in the school. Yeah, not just the students in your classroom, any student in the school, or if you're at a different school and you witness something, any students at that school as well, you're a mandatory reporter. And we've had parents who, and of course, when a report is made and if CPS decides, if Child Protective Services decides that an investigation is warranted, the family or the parents or the caregivers, I shouldn't say parents, the caregivers or the guardians of the child are not necessarily told who like made the report, but they can kind of like, you know, make a guess. And we have had irate parents come to the school because they assume that their child's or their student's teacher was the one who made the report and have come up to the school like wanting to know and been angry and irate and things like that. So it can be dangerous too. So, but is a requirement. And I have gone on very long about public education.
No, like I said, public education isn't a topic that I have firsthand experience with. And but I still feel very passionate about because, as I said, just in a shitty, shitty, snotty way, I'm like, I would rather people around me be smart instead of stupid. So I appreciate you kind of explaining some ins and outs of it that I didn't really even know about at all.
Mm-hmm. Always happy to drop some knowledge.
Jay, what do you want to rant at us about?
Yes, rant.
Lay it on me.
Oh, there's so much to cover, but because we were sort of like focusing on topics that are like specific to us or affect us or personal to us, and I decided to go with environment, even though that's a pretty broad topic in itself that applies to all of us and affects all of us. It is one that does enrage me a lot, like with current politics on a national level. You know, and I'm sure there's some bullshittery on the state level as well, but it's hard not to just wake up and see the news on a federal level and like see the rollbacks that are happening. In the newsletter, I'm going to include a A link to Harvard Law has a rollback tracker that is pretty rad.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to include that in the newsletter. And you can actually, and it will keep, it has the status of like where it's at, any lawsuits that are pending, like if the ACLU is like going after it or anything like that, it includes that. So it keeps track of all of that. It's really rad. And also terrible at the same time because you're like, God damn it, no more rollbacks. So yeah, I will put the Trump rollback tracker in the newsletter. But to start off with, like the first moment of rage was like a big ticket item was U.S. pulling out of the Paris agreement, like climate agreement. Like that was one where it was like on a national, like and a world level stage, just told the world like, we don't give a fuck. Like, come on. Like, it just,
it's a non-binding agreement. Yeah. It's pretty much like symbolic.
Just like a handshake.
To withdraw from it is like a giant middle finger to everybody. Yeah,
and
on the
to claim he's going to make a better deal. What fucking better deal are you talking about? We, as a world, like the scientists had like just put out a report around that time too of like, hey, in the next 10 years, we have to take drastic measures or it's going to be irreversible. Like the track that we're on, if we don't cut these carbon emissions like in half over the next decade. And so they're like, well, fuck that. We're just gonna like step back. So I think that was like the first obvious one, like off the top of my head, that was like rage inducing because it's so important that we set an example to the world that we're in this together, that we have to like we have to fix our planet. And to pull out of that, it didn't make sense to me. And hopefully with if Trump doesn't get elected, and we'll see if we can like repair that, if we will step back into that agreement, hopefully we'll see. But also not long after that, in 2017, Trump delisted climate change from national security threats. Like, that is a security threat. And why is that important? It's important because, Department of Defense funding, like, is part of that. Like the list of national threats, funding goes towards that. So to delist it meant funding is being taken away, like, important critical funding. And it's just, keeps stacking up of, like, showing that he doesn't believe in global warming, doesn't believe, like, that these things are a threat, or that he just doesn't care and he cares more about the lobbyists that are pushing him, like his fake war on coal. It's just,
well, and that also applies to not just the climate in the United States within our borders. If countries are having massive droughts or crop failures or floods or things, those can destabilize a region, mm-hmm. and cause a security threat. Mm-hmm. From the outside to us, from people, because there's political unrest in that country.
Yeah.
So, you know, when people are desperate and poor or sick or hungry and their government is not cohesive, like is being overthrown or is unstable, that can create a domino effect and can end up becoming a military issue for us.
Oh, yeah.
So not mm-hmm. just like, oh, is everything sunny and green here?
Yeah.
It's a global issue.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's wildly underestimating and misunderstanding what these threats even mean.
Mm-hmm. And the impact, like, that another nation's environment can have on us. Like, it affects
exactly.
us.
Exactly.
So these dominoes just keep being, like, pummeled over, and it's just like we just keep knocking them over, not even caring. And I just, those two, like, were two big huge ones for me that were like, what, why even do that? Like, just leave it on there. And like, I just, the climate change, like the global warming denial, is what's really frustrating to have, because I want people that believe in science at the top level, like, to
they
deny
need to be
science.
Educated.
Yes, this goes back.
I would like the people doing science decisions to do science.
Yes,
yes,
exactly. And another thing, like, I mean, I have a list of things, but I'll go through them as quickly as I can. Just Trump not giving a fuck about national monuments and, you know, land, because Trump reduced Bears Ears National Monument 85%. 85%.
That's crazy.
And it was to make room for mining and, like, energy, which sounds, I guess, great if you're into that, but, like, this is, like, national, like, a national monument of land, like, that was also sacred land. That the, another big reason about it is that this was, like, one of the first times we made a national monument based on, like, national Native American tribes, like, the Native American government was like, we want you to do this. And so they worked together for a compromise on this national monument. And now we're, like, again fucking them and being like, oh, we're going to, like, kick back 85% of it for mining, which the lines that they're redrawing, there are sites that are sacred, that are important to science, that are important for archaeologists. Like, there are sites that are now left out in the new, like, the new redrawn lines, the new boundaries. So it's just, it is so fucked up. Like, go look up Bears Ears National Monument. It is beautiful, beautiful, pristine land. It is gorgeous. And it just, and again, it's just us not keeping deals with the Native American government, where it's just us fucking them over on land yet again. And it's just another way, like, that the administration is fucking over the environment. Yeah, and there's lawsuits still happening over it. And part of it was after, like, a uranium firm, like, lobbied for it. And this effort was led by Andrew Wheeler, who is now the head of Environmental Protection Agency. Like, why would you put somebody in charge of the EPA that doesn't give a fuck? Like,
why would you put somebody in charge of the Department of Education who doesn't give a fuck? It's exactly. All crazy.
So we need
to put the fox in charge of hen house security.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So I'm just exactly. Like, I want to press a reset button on the whole administration, on the whole cabinet. So it's just never mind that it's been a revolving door to begin with of, like, people in and out and criminals and corruption. But I would like to put people in these positions that actually give a fuck about what they're in charge of.
Yes.
Or that are qualified. I mean, we can agree or disagree about the most expedient ways to form policy or which policies are going to be the most efficient mm-hmm. or direct, but at least be qualified to understand what those issues are.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And I'm like, should I just keep going? There's so many things. It's like between rolling back the Obama Clean Power Plan, which was like setting limits on, like, carbon pollution for power plants in the U.S. And he's basically, the administration handed it back to state level, which I guess, like, if you're like, oh, I want big government out of it, like, let's keep it at the state level. That sounds great. But obviously it wasn't fucking working to begin with to cut our carbon emissions. So, yeah, we needed this plan to help cut it down, do what the scientists were telling us, to try and cut it in half in the next decade before we can't go back. So just rolling back that was really another problem for me of, like, we have to cut down our carbon emissions. We have to. And, you know, because in the next decade, it's going to keep getting worse and worse. And, like, we might even see it in our lifetime. Like, you can already see it today, the effects happening today. So,
well,
writing it off like, oh, well, it's not going to happen while I'm alive. Like, no, like, I don't have kids. So, yeah, I don't have, like, a pony in this horse in a way of, like, who gives a fuck?
You don't have a pony in this horse.
Oh, a pony in this horse. A horse in this race is going to be my new thing.
I don't have a pony that's in this horse that's in this race.
Yes. But yeah. Yeah. This pony is not in this horse.
Mm. Well, because something that was pointed out to me, which is both encouraging and infuriating, is all the things that we're encouraged to do is as private citizens, like, you know, sort your recycling, carpool, conserve water, you know, don't have all your lights on all the time, you know, like all the things that you can do to cut back on your personal carbon footprint. Your personal carbon footprint is
minuscule.
The majority, which is certainly not to say don't do it, because you absolutely should do what you can and it'll make you feel good and every little bit counts. However, the thing is that the lion's share of emissions are from like big corporations and industrial apparatus. So even if we all, even if every single American was super on top of, you know, not driving their car more than they have to, or having an electric car and always sorting their recycling and being really, really conservative about their power and water usage and all of that, it's still not even close to where the majority of these emissions are coming from. Mm-hmm. So, which again does not mean that your personal sacrifices and conscientiousness are for naught. It's super important and you should absolutely keep doing it. But that is why we need these federal level or global level protections, because they're individuals that give a huge damn about this are not what is driving or hindering this effort.
Yes.
It's corporations.
Yes.
And industrial whatever.
But man, they
said
have,
apparatus earlier. I didn't.
They have done a good job of shifting the blame to us, though, haven't they? Like,
yes.
They have done such a superior job of making us as individual citizens feel like it is our job and it is our responsibility, when in reality,
or like banning straws, like that was such a like
yes,
memeable parody
shifted
thing, which, yeah, sure, using less plastic is a great fucking idea. Like, I don't have a problem with that, but like that is not what is causing the majority of our issues.
Nope.
Like, that is really putting a spotlight and making a complete farce out of something that is a piece of the problem, but is really just a, hey, look over here, like distraction technique.
Yes, exactly.
Shifting the blame, like you said.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is. And the thing is, we know what will happen if these sorts of protections aren't in place, because it is what was happening before.
Exactly.
You know? All, yeah. Like, it is like undrinkable water. It's pollution in the ground. It's people getting cancer. You know, we know what's going to happen if these protections are not in place. And so it's not even like a theoretical, like, oh, what would happen? Would corporations do it themselves? They would not. We know they wouldn't, because that is exactly why we have these sorts of regulations, because they absolutely will not. They will put shit in your shampoo. They will like poison you. Because they don't care. And I'm just going on now. But
but you're totally right. And as a semi-libertarian, in theory, yes, like capitalism should drive that. And yeah, if you're poisoning your clientele, in theory, you would think that that would diminish your profits over time. But we're talking about things that have an effect and have half-lives for decades. So, yeah, if there's a big scandal where people are dying immediately after they, like, drink your soda, that would have a big economic backlash and the market would correct itself because people would stop buying your fucking product. However, if it's something that takes years to manifest and is not an obvious correlation necessarily, then, yeah, they'll do it indefinitely, because short-term profits are more desirable than researching long-term consequences.
Yes.
And it's only a long-term consequence financially if they are found to be legally liable for it.
Exactly.
And that's hypothetical. So, but I will say that the plus side of capitalism is that, as frustrating it is that the federal government has rolled back these protections, boycotts and bad PR do make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
You can embarrass the shit out of some of these companies, and it has had an effect. You know, in terms of, if you find out that that a pipeline is trying to be built somewhere, or a company is, you know, trying to buy like federal parkland or things like that, that like a really strong public backlash can shame people into doing the right thing because it hurts their bottom line.
Yeah, social media has helped with that.
Really fucking cynical, but it can be weaponized for good.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yeah. Social media has like changed things a lot on that, because like boycotts before were like not the same before social media, but now social media, things will just like catch on fire with a hashtag or mm-hmm. a video. So yeah, make some noise.
That is just what mm-hmm. I want to encourage all of you listeners to do. Just make some fucking noise. Make noise at the ballot box, make noise at the protest, make noise on social media, make noise to that person at the water cooler at your job who hates black people. Make noise. Just make some fucking noise and educate yourself. That's it. That's mm-hmm. all I want from you. That's all I want. Yes.
It's all we all want. We love you.
It's been a good talk.
Good rant, you guys.
Good rant. It always feels good to rant. And there's like a million things to rant about. So.
Oh, yeah. I have like 10 more things.
We barely scratched the surface.
Yeah.
Of we're ranting.
Just vote. And
I mean, and if you want to hear us rant some more, we're all over social media. Mm-hmm. You can check us out on Facebook. Do you like that segue, y'all? You can check us out on Facebook.
Good. Again.
On the Instagram. Facebook, we're Hex Rated Podcast. Instagram, we're Hex Rated Witches. We have a website, hexratedpodcast.com. You can email us at hexratedpodcast@gmail.com. We have a newsletter. We have the Facebook Uncoven, where you can just, we'll just rant to you all day. You can just read our rants.
You can rant at us.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Email us. Message us. I will read and listen to your rants, and I will respond. And we will love you all the more for it. Unless mm-hmm. your rants are about how much you hate us for whatever reason, which has never happened. But
no, I want to hear it.
That I would delete. So if that's your rant, that's going to get deleted.
But speaking of that newsletter, we will definitely have more resources mm-hmm. and actionable things. First of all, every month at the bottom, if you scroll all the way down, we have Politicraft with news that is topical to witchy and political things, and also plenty of linkities of actionable things that you can do. No one expects you to do all of them, but, you know, some things for you to get started. And we'll have some stuff about what we talked about specifically in this episode, of course. So get signed up for that if you like.
Mm-hmm.
We would like it.
Do it. Get signed up for it. And the thing is, if you have a voice, if you have a platform, if you have privilege, just use it and make some noise.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlett's holding up her little kitty to the camera, and it's adorable.
He was meowing outside the door.
And he was like, let me in
here for a while. And I was hoping when you said make some noise, he would meow. But it was going to be real cute, you guys.
That would have been perfect. Jay, can you, like, go back and edit some some little kitty sounds? Okay, y'all. You ready? Hocus pocus, bitches! Bam. Okay. That was good.